Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of January 19th through 26th. This week we feature a conversation with Jeff Johnson, who spent some time here in America as a Jesuit scholastic over the summer. Jeff was involved in the making of a documentary called Xavier, Missionary and Saint, which aired on PBS in 2007 and 2008. He and Jeremy Zippel, another Jesuit scholastic, put together that film, which is available on Amazon.com and may be featured on other cable stations in the future. Jeff and I spoke here at America's offices. First off, why Xavier? I mean, there's so many great figures in the Jesuits, from Ignatius to somebody like Matteo Ricci, who perhaps was, you could say, was more successful in some of his missionary work than Xavier. But why pick Francis Xavier?
Well, 2 years ago, the Society of Jesus celebrated an important anniversary. It was the 500th anniversary of Xavier's birth, Ignatius's death, and Peter Faber's birth. And so it was a big anniversary year, and they were looking for ideas and ways to celebrate that anniversary. And so Jeremy and I came up with the idea of, you know, making a documentary film. There's not much out there on Xavier, book, film, or otherwise. And we thought a documentary biography would be the best way to get the information out about Xavier.
Now, there's not a lot of information about his life, as you say, in some of the features on the documentary. So how do you dramatize something that, you know, there are not a lot of photographs, for example, you know, or even paintings. So how do you start?
Right. Well, we were lucky to have the scholarship of a German Jesuit, Francis Schirhammer. And Schirhammer wrote a 4-volume biography. I think he started in the 20s or 30s and finally finished, I believe, in the 70s with the 4th volume. And he really has done all of the work on Xavier. So we used his 4 volumes as kind of the starting point. And then we interviewed people who could, you know, maybe fill in some gaps about what was going on when Xavier and Ignatius and Faber lived, what was going on in Paris, what was going on in Rome at the time, and then a little bit of history of India and China at the time. So we found the scholars who could speak to that and also incorporate a little bit of Xavier's story as far as they knew it.
So why don't you give our listeners just a brief kind of introduction to Xavier. He was born in Spain, like Ignatius, and studied with Ignatius at the University of Paris.
Right. He was born in the Basque region of Spain, about 70 miles east of where Ignatius was born. And like Ignatius, he started out in a kind of a minor noble family, but an important family in the Basque region. His father was on the losing side of a war, and his brothers fought in that war. And Xavier was on his way, I think, to being, you know, part of that noble family. Maybe he was going to be a soldier or a politician, but instead he decided to go to Paris for an education, and probably it seems to be ordained a priest, although that was not his strongest conviction. He was mainly trying to figure out a way to keep the family kind of involved in the politics of Spain, France, and the Basque region. And so he went to Paris to study and get ordained, and he would have come back to Navarre, where he's from, and been a parish priest. And hopefully, probably, he would have become maybe a bishop or a cardinal. And that would have, you know, raised the family's importance in the area. It wasn't clear, as John O'Malley says in the film, it wasn't clear that he had this big devotion or he was all that religiously motivated to become a priest. But when he got to Paris and met Ignatius, that changed. His first couple of years in Paris, Xavier had lived kind of the college life, not much different from what kids do today when they go off to college, experiencing their first taste of freedom. But he met Ignatius after a couple of years, and through spiritual conversation and coming to know Ignatius a little bit better, through that he came to know God better. And what had become, or what had started out as maybe a political move to be ordained a priest, ended up as a move of great devotion to serve God as a priest. And he and Ignatius and Faber eventually founded the Society of Jesus.
It's a very interesting historical moment there where the three of them wind up roommates
right.
at the University of
right,
Paris.
Right.
And Xavier, you mentioned that his family fought in this war in Spain. And an interesting point is that Ignatius was on the other side of that battle.
Right. Ignatius, his family would have been on the opposite side. They probably knew that as they were living in Paris. One wonders how much tension that would have created. But Ignatius was a pretty bright guy when it came to working with people and probably immediately put Xavier at ease. But that's the kind of stuff that we didn't really know. That's the kind of stuff that even Schirhammer doesn't speak too much about. So there were some gaps that we had to fill in, and but we tried to remain as faithful as we could to the scholarship that's out there. We tried not to invent things. We tried not to make him into something that he was not. But we just used the scholarship that's out there.
Now, after their time in Paris, Xavier and Ignatius went with a small group to Rome, and that was when the order was founded in Rome.
Right.
And in the early days, Xavier was sort of a bureaucrat, you know, involved in helping with the, you know, the various administrative duties that needed to be done. But then it seemed like in his heart he wanted to be a missionary.
Right. Well, I think he wanted to, you know, and that's something that is from the very earliest part of his life. He wanted to be in the midst of things. He wanted to be involved and active, whether that was going to be as a soldier or a politician or some prelate in the church. He wanted to be in the middle of things, and that never left him. And so I think he was probably a little disappointed when, in the beginning days of the Society of Jesus, he found himself sitting behind a desk in Rome answering letters written back to Ignatius from guys who were actually out there in the middle of things. But that didn't last long. He didn't sit behind that desk for very long because one of the men who was going to be sent to India fell sick, and that was Xavier's opportunity to go to India.
Now, in the course of making this documentary, you must have traveled to these various spots. I mean, keeping up with him must have been quite something. I mean, he went from Paris to Rome, Spain to Paris to Rome to India, and then, you know, on to Japan.
Right. It's amazing. We had the advantage of modern transportation, planes and trains and cars. A lot of their travel, especially in Europe, was on foot. And then the voyage from Portugal to India, as it's said in the documentary by Govan Bailey, would have just been torture. It would have lasted probably 3 or 4 months. And we know from his letters that Xavier had a miserable time on that trip from Portugal to Goa, India. He was seasick, especially through the doldrums, where there was very little wind, and they just kind of bobbed around in the middle of the ocean. And it was a miserable time, according to his own letters, which we used a lot in the film.
Another device you use in the film is using actors occasionally to, there's no dialogue, but they do just, you know, kind of stand in for Xavier and his friends. Was that a choice you made early on to include that in the documentary?
We had thought about the idea of making these reenactments. After we went and shot the footage, we took one summer to go and shoot the footage in Paris, Rome, India, and China, or Macau, China. And it was after that, when we got home, that we realized it would really be effective to tell the story if we showed, especially the interaction between the three of them, Ignatius, Xavier, and Faber, and also some of his work in India. So that was a decision we made after we got back and saw the interviews and saw the footage we had and realized that, you know, we needed to show a little bit more of, you know, what Xavier might have been like. We learned, I think, about his personality as a result of the interviews and as a result of traveling. And I think then we could do the reenactments and show maybe a little bit better who Xavier was.
Now, how long was he in Goa, India?
You know, he was sent to Goa to be the church's, the Pope's representative in India. There was already a Catholic establishment there in Goa. There was a bishop in Goa. And he was sent there as sort of the Pope's emissary with the idea of taking some of the reforms that had been sweeping the church in Europe to Goa and making sure that those reforms were followed. But he didn't spend much time in Goa. It didn't take long for him to get restless and want to go places where and take the gospel to places where it had never been taken before.
And he set his sights while he was in Goa on Japan, which he heard about from, I guess, people who had been there and visited, and it described to him a society that was similar to Spain in a lot of ways.
Right. I think one of the things that he found frustrating, and probably one of the, I don't know if you want to call it a character flaw, but he was confused by the Indian culture. It looked like, as John O'Malley and a couple of the other scholars told us, that while Indian culture might look like it was similar to Europe's, that is hierarchical with princes and nobles and then a working class and then a lower class, it was not like that at all. Europe had much more social mobility, and India did not. And he was confused by that. There was very little interaction between the classes in India. And so his attempts to convert the lower classes actually turned the upper classes off and away from Xavier. And that confused him a lot. At least that's the story we tell in the film. So he was looking for a place to spread the gospel that I think would be more conducive and more open. And he heard about the Japanese as a result of traveling. And I think the Japanese culture sounded very similar to what he was used to, and I think he thought he could work with that.
Now, in Japan, there's a kind of crucial transformation that occurs in his approach to ministry. When he gets there, at first he approaches it like he did in Goa, which was to spend a lot of time with the poor, wear these kind of threadbare clothes. But that wasn't effective, correct?
Right. When he got to Goa, the bishop that was there offered Xavier a place in his own house to stay, and Xavier declined. And like the Jesuits had done in Europe, he chose to stay with the poorest and the people most in need. So he decided to stay with people in a hospital and help care for them, their spiritual needs as well as their physical needs. And that was his mode in India, to go to where the poorest and neediest were and take the gospel there. And he realized in Japan that was not going to work. He realized in Japan that the way to convert an entire people was to start at the top, start with the emperor, start with the nobles. And if he could get their approval and if he could get their conversion, then they would be more open, and as a result, the people living in those areas would be more open to receiving his message.
And that was kind of a radical idea in terms of missionary outreach, is to really adapt to the culture, to follow their way of doing things, and try to present Christ and the gospel story kind of in their terms.
Right. Yeah, and that's the part that I left out, that it wasn't just a matter of going to the nobles, but it was, how do you approach people of different cultures with the Christian message? I think he had to boil it down to what is its essence, and then speak to them in terms that they could understand, speak to them in terms that they would appreciate. And as a result of that, he ended up using terms that the Japanese used for God. That was very different. That had never happened before. And it really established a way of mission and a way of evangelization that continues today, this idea of getting into a culture, understanding the culture, then bringing the message of the gospel. And that's still done today. And I think we have Xavier to thank for that. Although St. Paul did the same thing.
Matteo Ricci was someone who followed in Xavier's footsteps, maybe not literally, but definitely in his approach to ministry. He really took a page out of Xavier's handbook there and went to Chinese society and met with the nobles and tried to present the gospel in a way they would understand. So Xavier really was the first to try this, to made this break with Western culture. It was believed that Christianity sort of was rooted in Western culture, and Western culture needed to come with Christianity. But he said, no, that doesn't need to be the case.
Right. I think a couple of the scholars talk about that we interviewed, and he really was in experimental mode to find out what is the heart of the Christian message. And I think he discovered that some of what he had thought was the heart of the message, or at least part of an important part of the message, was actually just some of the trappings of European culture that wasn't necessarily Christian. It had certainly been influenced by Christianity, but it was not itself Christianity. By interacting with closely and becoming friends with people and establishing real connections with people, he learned, I think, what the heart of the gospel was, and it allowed him to bring that message to Japan.
Now, you mentioned Xavier's restlessness, and that's certainly one of the themes in your documentary. He went to India. He was restless after a while and went to Japan. After Japan, he wanted to go to China because he believed that that's really where he perhaps could, convert to continent. That's an interesting part of this, is that he had real ambition. He wanted to find the next Constantine. He wanted to convert the East.
Right. And it's a tension that we play with in the film between his personal ambition and his mission as given by God. He wrestled with that himself, as we know from his letters. At one point, he was trying to decide, do I go to Japan? Do I go to China? Do I go back to India? Do I go back to Rome in Europe? And it was really a tough decision for him. He said that he prayed for months about this. And I think he was trying to come to some sort of clarity and understanding. Am I doing this just because I'm restless and, I'm not happy with where I am? Or am I doing it because I'm being called to go there and do this? And so we played with that tension. And I think that, in hindsight now, it's easy for us to see that it probably was God's call that took him to Japan. But to be there in the 1540s, in the middle of India, on the ground, not knowing what the next move is, I'm sure for him there was a lot of doubt as to whether he was doing the right thing or not. The way we ended up casting the story is that I think he thought he had died a failure. He never made it to China. He made it to Macau, or he made it to Sancian, an island just off the coast of China, but he never made it to the mainland of China. I think that he saw himself as having failed in his mission. I think he died with confidence that God could overcome his own personal shortcomings, but that he himself had not really accomplished what he'd been sent to do. At least that's the angle we take in the film. And I think it's supported by his letters and by the scholarship.
Well, that's one of the compelling parts about the documentary, is that you do bring out this human element that, perhaps he did have a little ambition and then he was restless, and that he did fail in some of the things he set out to do. And yet, after his death, he was widely revered by people in India and everywhere that he went.
Yeah, I think, one of the things that we had to dispel was this idea that Xavier was just hopping from port to port, baptizing thousands of people at a time, and then moving on to the next port, having really not made any sort of connection. And that's just not the case. There's a great little piece in the film where one of the scholars explains the mass conversions. And that's just the way things worked in India and in Europe at the time. If a leader converted, then the people underneath the leader would probably convert as well. So he wasn't just going from port to port, baptizing people in a sort of fast food way. He was actually getting to know these people, even before he got to Japan. That was his mode, getting to know people. And one of his letters, he says that that as he was leaving one port, he had to wait until midnight to leave because the people would have clamored for him to have stayed. And I don't think that's him boasting that, he was a famous person or whatever. I mean, that was his genuine, something had happened. He had made a connection with people, and he knew if he was going to get out of there, he had to kind of sneak out of there. And that's the effect that he had on people. There's a story that we tell in the film that after he died off the coast of China, having not accomplished what he wanted to do, his body was taken back eventually to Goa, but along the way, they stopped in the ports that he had been in and that he had worked in, and the people revered him and liked him so much that they all wanted him to be buried in their city. And I think he was buried about five times before he ended up in his final resting place, which is in Goa. And everyone wanted to hang on to him. And that, you don't do that if you're just going through places doing mass conversions. You do that having become these people's friend.
And it does kind of bring to mind St. Paul, who did something similar, you know, moved from town to town, you know, bringing people to the faith, and yet was well-loved and remembered and kept in touch with them. So, well, the film, again, is Xavier, Missionary and Saint, narrated by Liam Neeson. And this will be hopefully soon again on television, and when it is, we will call that to your attention. But we want to thank Jeff Johnson for coming by and chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine podcast. Again, you can purchase a copy of the Xavier documentary by simply searching in Amazon.com under Xavier Missionary Saint. A link is also available on our podcast page. A reminder that we will be returning to our weekly schedule starting in February with the February 2nd edition. And if you want to respond to this or any other conversation, you can do so by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.